Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
I'm your host, Nicole Taylor, and you're listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Today, we'll be talking Emily G's Jam. But up first, food headlines. We haven't done food headlines in a long time, so I thought I would give you guys the latest and greatest in the world of food, what's making headlines. Oh, also, I have to welcome, this is really not a guest, but my new intern, Simone Johnson, is in the studio. She's helping me out. Simone, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
So you're going to chime in on a few of the headlines. The first headline is s'mores are taking over. I have to say that about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago, I posted the photos on Instagram as well as Twitter. I trekked down to Dominique Ansel. You guys may know the name because he is the master, the brain child behind the Cronut. He actually was on one of the shows here on Heritage Radio Network here recently, so you can go to our archives and check that out. But I say stop talking about the Cronut and talk about this frozen s'mores he has. Simone, have you heard about it?
I've never heard of a frozen s'more before.
I know. Mm-hmm. He created it. It's like they make it. It's $7. People are like, oh, my gosh, it's $7. I'm like, it's so worth it.
Reading the description, it sounds worth it.
Yeah, so it's on this like hickory smoke stick. You go to the counter, you go to, you know, go to NoHo. There's not a long line. That's was good. No one in there when I went in there. And they make it to order. They literally have the marshmallow and the ice cream. I'm gonna assume that it's probably in the freezer, and then they take a blowtorch and you can sit there and see them actually brulee the marshmallow.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's amazing. Yeah. And the trick, so there are like two other people. I actually did a Vine as well, this girl eating the, did you see it?
No.
The video. Mm-hmm. So I did like a 30-second video of this girl eating the thing. It looks so sexual.
I wanted to say that. But I mean, about the description, I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to.
So the inside is the marshmallow. And when you bite into it, there's an ice cream. I feel like it's like a Persian ice cream or something in the inside. Mm. And like chocolate and cookie. I can't really describe it, but you have to eat it very quickly because the inside starts to melt. Mm. It's super good. And then I saw Bon Appetit, as I was like been telling everyone about, you need to go and try this frozen s'mores at Dominique Ansel. BonAppetit.com did a blog post called 5 alternate s'mores. What is it called? 5 alternate s'mores thing. Do you remember? Did you read it?
I did read it.
That are breaking the campfire classic rules.
I thought it was very creative.
Which ones did you like? Which ones were you interested in?
The one that really caught my eye was the bacon s'more. Who would have thought a bacon s'more?
I am so not into that. I'm over bacon. You're not over bacon?
Well, it just, the whole idea of bacon and marshmallows, it's interesting. I want to try the s'more in a jar.
The bacon s'more is from a luxury resort in Cannon Point, Utah. Amon Gira. Shannon Foster is the chef there. It's bacon, graham cracker, and chocolate. In this, it looks, oh my gosh, a pickled flat pear. I don't know about that one. I'll pass on that one.
No,
not so
much. Which one caught your eye?
The frozen s'mores. I feel like all the other ones are kind of like some kind of pudding or some kind of cheesecake with like marshmallow on top, brulee. I feel like Dominique Ansel really mastered the whole feeling of a s'more. I never grew up like doing the s'mores thing. You grew up here you grew up in Colorado and then you moved to Staten Island.
I when I went camping in Colorado, I had s'mores, and maybe last year my friends had s'mores. We made some in the kitchen, but it's nothing like that article.
All right, so folks, tweet me if there are any places in your town or your neighborhood, someone that's doing s'mores, I want to know about it because I think it's a thing now. We're going to actually take a short break. And we're going to come back and talk more food headlines. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
This one's called All You Gotta Do by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org. No more. You don't have to sigh.
No more. Welcome back to Hot Grease. We're talking food headlines, the latest, greatest. So many things happened last week. One of the things that caught my eye. It's the FDA and this whole gluten-free thing. I'm really not sure the specifics or if it's actually been approved, but what I read from graincouncil.org is that the FDA defines gluten-free. So I'm assuming that means that they've come up with an official definition of how the term gluten-free can be used on food labels. So actually, this ruling has been a long time, I'm quoting, long time coming, and Congress asked the FDA to set a standard in 2004, and yeah, yada, yada. Yeah, as you know, we've talked about it. Really, we were talking about gluten-free here on Hot Grease before it became like, I don't know. I feel like some people are doing it, but as we know, there are a lot of people who actually suffer from celiac or have sensitivity to gluten. We've been talking about it for a while, and so now the FDA is giving it an official definition, and this is for people that are labeling and all that good stuff. It's big business in gluten-free. I think all my friends who went to the fancy food show told me that that probably was the hottest and biggest thing, gluten-free. So that was a big food headline. So all you folks who are practicing a gluten-free diet or making products, you should check this out if you haven't already. Another food headline. Simone, I have to ask you about this one because you've done the one thing that I have not done in food, and that is to farm. Yes. And one of the headlines that came out from the New York Times, actually August 3rd, which was yesterday. What was that today? What's today's date? Something. It was in the New York Times online. The title of the article is called "A Cost of Importing Food Soars and Jamaicans Turn to the Earth." I wasn't so shocked about this because over the last 6 years, I've been going to the Caribbean to vacation and on travel and press trips. And I was astonished at the whole conversation around how much food is coming from outside of Jamaica, because I always considered Jamaica as being this agrarian, or, you know, the Caribbean being an agrarian place. What are your thoughts?
Well, after reading it, I mean, I think it's to be in a bad place when you're depending on someone else or another country or company for food. So I'm glad that the government is making it their motto, as it said in the article. They want more farm to table projects.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's a great idea. I've never been to the Caribbean, so I don't know what's going on over there.
Well, basically, the agricultural minister in Antigua said, quote, "We're in a food crisis. Every country is concerned about it. And how can we produce our own? How can we feed our own?" I mean, this article is very surface. And if you go even deeper to look at like the political history of food and governing, it's kind of all tied together. The money, the greed. Yeah. But I find this amazing, and I'm glad that people are, like, raising this issue up. And people here in the States actually get it.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful slideshow of people farming. I have to ask you this. Farming is tough work, right,
it
Simone?
It is tough work. I have so much more respect for farmers. I think more people need to know what goes into farming. The labor is intense. When it's hot, it's hot and it's raining all week, you know.
Yeah, you spent a week on a farm in upstate New York and it was intense.
It was intense. I mean, I learned a lot, digging trenches, weeding, mulching, all that. And I think the whole farm life, there's a lot to it, but I learned discipline, personal perseverance. And I just feel like I think it's maybe you don't have to be interested in agriculture, but I feel like people should know what it's about, what it takes, because everybody eats.
I feel like in the Caribbean, and I could be totally wrong, but this is my opinion. I think there's just like what happened in the 50s and 40s and 50s in the South. You know, parents and people didn't want their kids to farm. They wanted them to get an education. They wanted them to get, you know, jobs that were not, you know, blue collar jobs. So they pushed them away from farming. I always say, people ask me the question of why is it that black people don't farm anymore? I tell them that, you know, assimilation. When you were able to buy stuff in the grocery store and not farm and not be out from sun up to sundown or have your kids stay out of school to help in the fields, that kind of pushed us away from farming. I would say that is a part of it, as well as I think all the hurricanes and all the natural disasters is a huge issue in the Caribbean. The article talks a bit about the whole climate change and food security.
Yeah.
It's a very deep issue that I think people need to pay attention to.
Definitely.
Because, you know, Haiti, what happened in Haiti is completely off the map. But this article is bringing it back. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We are gonna talk with a producer of jams and sauces, and she actually uses plenty of farmers to create her products. We're gonna come back after a short break, folks.
Hey girl, what you doing with that bucket?
It's not a bucket, it's a tub.
Well, why don't you get your...
This song is called Soul Tub by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned for more Hot Grease.
Wow. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I bet you never knew.
Nah.
What a bucket can do.
Guess not.
Look out now.
Ooh.
Let me hear.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surifarms.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. It's always a delight to talk to someone from my home state of Georgia. And on the phone to talk Emily G's Jam is Miss Emily Myers. Emily, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So I have to tell you, I was in Atlanta about a month ago, and my last stop was at Farm Burger, and I was able to douse a bunch of your hot pepper sauce on the fried okra there. Amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. That's a personal favorite of mine. I love that sauce, and it's gone over so well with Farm Burger, and they are reordering at quite a rate, so I'm thrilled.
How did you how did the partnership with yourself and Farm Burger happen?
Well, admittedly, they're one of my favorite restaurants, and I love what they do and their focus on local. And so, admittedly, I was probably stalking them a little bit, and we got to talking one day with George, and I mentioned the pepper vinegar sauce because they have hot sauce out, and I drop off a couple of samples, and they absolutely loved it, and it's been a huge hit. People love, they love to see something local out there, and there's, I'm not even sure I'm not sure if there are other hot sauces locally or not. There probably are, and I'm just not aware of them. But it's just gone over great, and I make deliveries almost weekly now to Farm Burger for it.
Very good. I want to talk about the traditions of bottles on the table. I'm going to assume, did you grow up, are you born and raised in Georgia, Emily?
No. I lived a little bit of everywhere. My family is from Alabama. My mom's side is from Mobile, and my dad's side is from Anniston. I was born in Richmond, Virginia, and then we moved quite a bit growing up, but most of our vacations were visiting our grandparents and down south, and a lot of my food memories and how I was raised and cooking was very southern.
So, of course, you remember having all the bottles on the table. The hot pepper
sauce.
Yes, the hot pepper sauce, the chow chow. Tell me a little bit about those traditions, you know, inspiring you to create this gorgeous company.
Oh, thank you so much. You're very sweet to say that. Well, you know, back then, our grandparents canned, and that was just what you did. Or, you know, my grandparents called it putting up. So, you know, that was always a tradition within my family, as it was a tradition in most families in the South. And, you know, being able to have some wonderful strawberry jam in the middle of winter was such a treat to have. And, you know, even every breakfast we would sit in front of, and breakfast at our house was a massive spread of, you know, biscuits and grits and bacon and ham and eggs and all kinds of things. But, you know, we would always have out the honey and the hot sauce and jams and, you know, sometimes even relish, all kinds of things. So that was just how you ate. And specifically with the hot pepper, the pepper vinegar sauce, I was raised on pulled pork with vinegar sauces. You know, that's how the collard greens were cooked, the black-eyed peas. So I really love that spicy vinegar bite in that sauce.
Cool. And yeah. one of the things that I love about your story is that you didn't set out to create Emily G's jam. You actually just started doing a few bottles and started selling at the farmer's market, and now it's taken off.
Yes, it has. It really started out as a lark, and basically we were just kind of doing this on the side just to see how it would go and having fun with it. And the next thing you know, people got really interested in buying more and more, and we just started growing with it. My husband had, and this was right in 2008 when kind of the market was imploding, and he was laid off from his position. He worked in finance, as a lot of people were in that area. And so at that point, Emily G's became the way that I needed to put food on the table. So I got very serious very quickly, and I, you know, worked very hard to make Emily G's grow in a way that kept our products authentic and delicious, but also allowed us to grow and expand, you know, and to support the family.
And as a chef, I mean, you're a chef. You worked at restaurants. What's the mantra for Emily G's?
There's quite a few things on the day you catch me for the mantra, but my saying is, I really believe food is something delicious that should make you happy, and there's no reason for it not to be all natural. So, you know, I really want to create food that makes people happy, that when they sit down at a table and they take, for example, our strawberry pineapple jam and put it on a biscuit while they're sitting there with their family on a Sunday morning for breakfast, I want them to eat that biscuit with the jam and really be wowed. I've always had this big issue with food disappointment, and what I mean by that is you go out, you buy something that looks delicious, you eat it, and you cannot believe you just spent that money on it, and it doesn't taste anything like you thought. And I, you know, Emily G's, you will never have food disappointment. You will love what we make. It's my goal to do that, and I really work hard to use top-quality ingredients and a can in a way that really makes all the flavors come out and these unique combinations, and really is something that people are excited to share.
Cool. We're going to take a short break, and I want to talk a little bit about some of your products and cheese pairings, because I think the Cheese Society winners were announced a few days ago. And I know you have a great resource on your website. So we're going to take a short break. Listeners, keep listening. We'll be back in a sec.
This one's called Bedside Window by the California Honey Drops. on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Stay tuned. Gone by.
You return so clear in my memory, as though we'd never said goodbye.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
We're chatting with Georgia-based small batch condiments company, jams, sauces, and such, Emily G's. Did I say G's?
You did say G's, yes. Emily G's.
Yes. I'm sure people do the J's, G's. I'm thinking jams. But Emily, your product line, you have a lot of cheese pairings. You actually have a whole portion on your site that's dedicated to jams and cheeses that actually go with them. Do tell.
Well, if you're raised in the South, the idea of having a pepper jelly on cream cheese as an appetizer, some crackers, it's common. It's a very common appetizer. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, I've had all my life growing up. But we want to take it to the next level as well. And, of course, jams like our jalapeno raspberry, which is probably the most popular jam, you can do that on cream cheese with crackers for really just easy appetizer to take tailgating. But you can also pair it with, for example, the Sweetgrass Dairy, which I believe might have won an award for their Green Hill recently at Cheese Society. Our jalapeno raspberry pairs wonderfully with the Green Hill. And so we do, for example, the Cabernet Sauvignon pairs great with a sharp a blue cheese. And some of the jams, even the fruit-based jams like the blueberry, blueberry is wonderful with Chèvre. And so you can do all these different cheese pairings. And when you create a cheese plate, you know, you can have a charcuterie, a couple of wonderful cheeses, and just have the jam either, you know, in the jar, just open up the jar, or you could put into a nice jelly bowl. If you were lucky enough to have grandparents who had jelly bowls back in the day. I'm not sure anybody has them anymore, but there's a few still floating around there.
Yeah, you see a few every now and then at vintage spots, so folks need to grab them up. Grabbing them up. So people who are outside of Georgia, where can they find you? Where can they find your products?
If you go to our website and you click on where to find us, we have an entire Google-based map where you can, and as well as a zip code locator, and you can find from there where to, you know, where you can go. And we're in a lot of really nice gourmet restaurants. We're in some of the larger chains here and there. So that's really the best way. And then if there's any questions at all, if anybody has any questions, be it about cheese pairings or locations or whatever, there's a contact page, and I will get back to you immediately. So people can always ask whatever question they need to ask there.
And what's next? Are you adding anything new and exciting to the line?
Yes, we are. We are. It's super, super top secret, though, so I can't let you know. But we will be doing a new jam next year that's going to feature some wonderful Georgia products, wonderful Georgia produce. So I'm very excited about that, and that will launch next spring.
Very exciting. Thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease. I mean, I love to have people on the show who believe and have the same mantra about supporting local and working with farmers, and I know that you do that. So congrats to all of your success. And
thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Well, dude, thank you so much. Take care.
Listeners, if you want to find out more about Emily G's jams, you can actually go to Twitter, go to Facebook under the name Emily G's Jam. All right, we'll be back next week. Next week on Hot Grease, have two very exciting guests. Afropunk. Do you know Afropunk? It's the festival that's here every year in Brooklyn. They're going to be on talking about their all their food trucks and all the food that they're curating around that. Who else do we have, Simone, next week? I forget.
You also have Lust for Leaf.
Oh, yeah, Lust for Leaf. Two bloggers with this amazing all-vegetarian cookbook that's centered around picnics and outdoors. So why not have them on the same day as Afropunk? Because Afropunk is an outdoor festival.
It sounds exciting.
So, hey, folks, remember, You can join me here every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.